your fifth case, Northern Grain versus Grubbins. Mr. Bush?
Good morning. Trent Bush on behalf of the appellant and plaintiff in the case, Northern Grain Marketing. May it please the court and counsel. I feel a little bit bad about bringing such a plain personal jurisdiction claim after all the other exciting arguments we've heard this morning, but that's the case that I have before the court this morning. And the law, of course, is the law, of course, is well settled and well worn on this subject. So I won't.
You think so?
I won't recite the actual law because it's been briefed well, and of course, the court's familiar with it in the first place. So, but what we're dealing with here, Your Honors, is an Illinois plaintiff, Northern Grain Marketing, who brought a complaint to compel arbitration in the District Court of Illinois, and we have a Wisconsin farmer defendant. And so, of course, the context that we're before the court is that a motion to dismiss was brought by the defendant, and the district court granted the motion to dismiss, finding that there was not personal jurisdiction over this Wisconsin farmer. We have not alleged and have not briefed that we have that Illinois courts would have general jurisdiction over the Wisconsin defendant, in this case, Mr. Grieving, but rather we assert and do believe that the court does have specific jurisdiction over Mr. Grieving. Of course, there's two prongs to a specific jurisdiction analysis, the first being whether the defendant has purposefully directed his activities at the forum state, and then the second prong being whether the injury arises out of that contact. And I'm just going to really hone in, because, again, the law is well settled on this, where we disagree with the district court's analysis. It really has to do with what we feel is an overly narrow and myopic view of the overall relationship between these parties.
This relationship was not like a long-term franchise relationship as you had in Burger King. This is a series of spot contracts, right? Where Mr. Grieving would choose, and you would choose every year whether to buy or sell grain, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
As I read our cases, we focus on the specific contracts in issue, not whether perhaps 10 years earlier there was this chance meeting at the grain meeting in Illinois. We're well past that. Many contracts have been signed, performed. As near as I can tell, we don't have any signed contracts in front of us that you're suing on. So with respect to the contracts at issue here, we've got, they're basically, you're alleging oral contracts made in Wisconsin, grain grown in Wisconsin, to be delivered in Wisconsin, and to be paid for in Wisconsin. Right?
Yes. In a sense, that's true. But again, I think that's an overly narrow reading of the relationship, and I think that the cases suggest that we don't just focus on the particular disputed issue, but in a contractual context, which again is set forth in the brief, the court looks at the prior negotiations and the course of conduct. And the most fundamental aspect of a personal jurisdiction case is whether it's reasonably anticipated that that defendant would be hailed into court in the particular forum. So the question, I think, in doing that analysis is whether or not he would reasonably anticipate that after dealing with an Illinois grain bin for almost 10 years, if a contractual dispute arose, if it's reasonably anticipated that he would end up in an Illinois court with a contract dispute. So, Judge, I agree that a lot of, you know, Mr. Grieving, the facts really aren't in dispute. As the court noted, he is a Wisconsin resident. That's where he grew the corn. That's where he delivered it to the elevator. But he did make the contact with the Illinois then.
Would you agree that Wisconsin law would apply to these claims?
Well, Judge, we never got to that. There was one
overwhelming contacts with Wisconsin, right?
Quite a bit of the contact was in
everything,
in the conduct.
Everything except your client's location.
our client's location, the original meeting. Again, we've pointed out.
You're treating this as if it were a franchise relationship, and it really wasn't. But let me ask. This was briefed to the district court. It's not briefed before us. But I'm trying to understand how you can compel arbitration without a signed agreement by the defendant agreeing to arbitration. Or am I overlooking something?
Well, Judge, that is one of the four defendant advanced four arguments in the motion to dismiss to the district court. Of course, the court didn't address the remaining three. We got out on the jurisdiction. If we would get to that point in the district court, essentially the court does have to determine the contractual issue if there is, in fact, an arbitration clause. So
well,
I would concede that.
Where is it?
Well,
show me, is there a piece of paper you're suing, that you're suing to compel arbitration under, that this defendant signed?
Judge, what the foundation
is there such a piece of paper?
There's not a signed piece of paper.
Okay. You can go ahead and tell me, but I have you've got a huge hill to climb there.
Okay. The but to that is that when you're dealing with merchants under the Uniform Commercial Code, written confirmation of the contract is sufficient to establish the writing requirement to bring the petition to compel under the Arbitration Act. So that's my but.
All the prior things that he signed did not have arbitration clauses in them, right?
All of the prior?
Yeah.
In the whole course of dealing between the parties?
I'm just looking at the ones in the appendix here.
No, I think that you will find that, Judge, that's incorporated. He did attach several signed contracts to his declaration, acknowledging that he did sign certain contracts, and you'll see the incorporation of the NGFA arbitration rules in those contracts. Again, we're dealing with a long-term relationship between these two parties, as the court noted, for the production of this grain. So those would be consistently used throughout that relationship. Again, we didn't get to that issue. The court found that we didn't make the prima facie showing of jurisdiction, which, again, I think was an overly narrow view given the rule that in a contractual context, you look at the whole relationship.
Could you tell us about the status of the Wisconsin litigation in state court?
I will, Your Honor. That matter is still pending as Walworth County.
What has happened?
Oh, what has happened? The case is in discovery.
Okay.
And to the Illinois plaintiffs in that case, as Mr. Shoemaker has pointed out in his brief, have settled their claims with Northern Grain. And Tom Wilson, the individual defendant in the case. The claim still is pending in Walworth County with respect to Northern Grain and Marvin Grieving.
Have you raised arbitration as a defense there?
That issue has been raised before that court. I will defer to Mr. Shoemaker on the exact status of the case, as we do have Wisconsin counsel that handles that matter, Your Honor. I'm not the principal attorney with respect to that case. But unless there's any questions, I would defer then to my rebuttal time.
Thank you, Mr. Bush.
Thank you.
Mr. Shoemaker.
Good morning. May it please the Court. We have a status conference in Walworth County this afternoon at 2:30, so I'll be brief, but I think you've already scheduled for that possibility. The district court properly dismissed Northern Grain's action against Mr. Grieving because none of the alleged facts relied upon by Northern Grain, considered separately or in their totality, are sufficient to show that Mr. Grieving purposely availed himself of the privilege of doing business in Illinois. What the facts do show, as Judge Hamilton's question showed, is that Mr. Grieving, while in Wisconsin, sometimes agreed to proposals by Mr. Wilson, an agent of a company whose principal place of business is in Illinois, to sell grain grown on his farm in Wisconsin and to deliver that grain to grain elevators in towns in Wisconsin. The facts also show that as it relates to this particular set of contracts, when Mr. Wilson met with Mr. Grieving at a Denny's restaurant in Wisconsin, Mr. Grieving refused to sign them because he'd never agreed to them. The facts also show when Mr. Wilson came to Mr. Grieving's farm in Wisconsin, Mr. Grieving refused to sign them because he said, I never agreed to these. The facts also show that Mr. Grieving, while he was in Wisconsin and while his attorney was in Wisconsin, refused to participate in arbitration before the National Grain and Feed Association, which has its principal place of business and conducts arbitrations in Washington, D.C. That's what the facts show, and that's what the district court made its decision on. The court's question, Judge Hamilton's questions about the seed meeting, really point to the fact that that seed meeting is irrelevant to this case, but let me just say a few things about that seed meeting, because that's probably the only fact that shows anything about Mr. Grieving in Illinois. What those facts show is in 2003, about 10 years ago, Mr. Grieving, at the suggestion of a seed corn salesman from Wisconsin, went to Rochelle, Illinois, to an insurance agent's office and attended a seed corn meeting to learn about the latest seed corn technology, what herbicides it was resistant to, what bugs it was resistant to, and so on. That meeting had nothing to do with Northern Grain's business. There was no contract entered into that business, with Northern Grain entered into there, no contract discussed there. Instead, what the facts show is Mr. Wilson, an employee of Northern Grain, went to that meeting because part of his marketing efforts to meet farmers is to go to those kinds of meetings where farmers happen to be and meet them. What the facts show, that is Mr. Wilson's affidavit, is after that meeting, following that meeting, he began a series of soliciting contracts from Mr. Grieving in Wisconsin for grain grown at his farm in Wisconsin to be delivered to grain elevators in Wisconsin. Those facts have nothing to do with these contracts. They have nothing to do with any contracts other than Mr. Grieving happened to meet someone from Northern Grain at that meeting. As the district court said, such random, fortuitous, attenuated contacts cannot sustain personal jurisdiction under the Due Process Clause.
Mr. Shoemaker, is it correct that the Rockford Federal Court is actually closer to Mr. Grieving's farm than the court in Milwaukee or Madison?
No, the court is in Elkhorn. Mr. Grieving lives in Elkhorn.
Right.
And the court is in Elkhorn.
No. If you were in federal court in Wisconsin, isn't Rockford the closest?
I doubt it. Maybe someone else in the court could take judicial notice of that. But
colleagues know more about Wisconsin geography.
I'm not sure. I know it'd be, it's a little further for me as his attorney. Mr. Grieving is in Elkhorn, which is on a triangle between Milwaukee and Madison, and there. And I'm not sure.
Okay,
don't think the answer is constitutionally significant, Your Honor. But
it's probably not. Probably not. But I'm curious.
The other alleged contacts with Illinois are that Mr. Grieving knew that he was doing business with an Illinois company, a company whose principal was business. From a due process analysis, so what? Doesn't matter. That's not enough. The other alleged contact is that he received, there were at least two telephone conversations with Northern Grain's general manager over this eight-year period, and at least, and several communications with the office manager. Again, that's not constitutionally significant to establish personal availment.
The plaintiff company here, Northern Grain, is essentially a broker. Is that how this operates?
I think they describe their business as being in the business of marketing grain. So, as I understand it, what they do, Your Honor, is they solicit contracts from farmers. They maybe immediately. Some of those contracts are futures contracts to be delivered some points of date. I believe that they may immediately sell those contracts to somebody else, for example, on the Chicago Board of Trade.
Okay.
And they may have the grain.
So they don't have any storage facilities or anything like that, this Northern Grain Company? They have them stored closer to the source?
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I'm not an expert, and we haven't gotten that deep into it. I imagine they have some grain elevators at their facility because they probably sometimes have farmers bring grain there, just like Mr. Grievina, but you know, corn is a fungible commodity, so
right. But this company is national in scope.
Northern Grain is a Delaware corporation with its principal place of business in Harmon, Illinois.
Right.
I believe they do business throughout Illinois and Wisconsin. They're a subsidiary, or not a subsidiary, but one of their members is Growmark, which is a large agricultural company. So I can't tell you the entire scope of their business, but their certainly scope of their business is more broad than Mr. Grieving's farm in Walworth County. So, second, this case doesn't arise out of any alleged contacts with Illinois. It's nothing to do with the seed corn meeting, nothing to do with anything else. So for all the reasons we talked about in our brief, and really as Judge Reinhart said fairly succinctly, probably better than we did in our brief, due process does not allow for the exercise of jurisdiction here. With respect to the court's question about the Illinois-Wisconsin litigation, the two other farmers who alleged that Northern Grain had falsely claimed that they had entered into oral contracts, those cases have been resolved. There was some mediation. There's been some discovery. We have a status conference at 2:30 this afternoon. In that case, we're going to ask for a order allowing us a scheduling order to file a motion for summary judgment based not only on the alleged oral contracts that cannot give rise to an arbitration clause and on the testimony that, not in the record in this course, but on the testimony of the designees of Northern Grain, where we tried to find out when these alleged oral contracts took place. But I think to go further in that would be going further than the record in this case.
I'd like to ask both counsel, while this appeal is pending, to notify us immediately of any significant developments in the Wisconsin litigation, such as a settlement might encompass this appeal.
Yes.
I assume you wouldn't settle one without the other.
Mm-hmm. I assume so. We would always be cognizant of letting you know that you didn't have to do any further work, just as we always appreciate that kind of help.
Thank you.
So unless you have further questions for me, Your Honor, I think I've covered what we had to say, and I thank the court for your questions and for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to follow up on your question, Judge Sykes, the business does have a local storage facility, so it not only buys grain from local farmers, but does contract to purchase grain from other farmers regionally. So that's
how. And then you resell those?
Yeah, it's kind of like the banking system almost with
right.
grain. You can deposit your grain up in a Wisconsin storage facility, and there's exchanges, and they get credit for it, and they get their check from Illinois and that type of thing. So that's the nature. It's a regional business, really. So just, again, my main point is, and our main position is that to look at all of these individual events individually is too narrow of a view, that those events, and as the cases have said, while they may be individually insignificant, collectively they're important. And collectively, the contacts with Mr. Grieving over almost a 10-year period, I just have to touch on the seed corn meeting. You know, we've all been to, you know, if you go to an ABA show or something like that, there's all sorts of vendors. That's what a trade show is. It's to start a relationship. You know, he was in Illinois to do that, to look at whether it was for seed or what. The common view of a trade show is that you're there to meet folks that are going to serve your needs, and that's why NGM's representative
so
went to them.
So let's see. You meet at an ABA meeting in California. You're from Illinois. You meet somebody from Florida, and you work together for a number of years on a number of cases. A dispute arises over a fee, you can sue in California?
Well,
that's where the relationship started?
Well, it's not necessarily where it started, but that's a factor, Judge. And the Logan case is somewhat similar, you know, where somebody had attended a trade show and had scanned their card in, and that's how things got started. But as the court noted, it's not necessarily dispositive who started what or when. That's a factor to take into account. It's that the ball got rolling, and that can be the basis.
Wouldn't you, in effect, be asking us to adopt a but-for test?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
But well, I mean, you know, but for that meeting at the insurance office, we wouldn't have the situation we have before us.
Well, I think but for that meeting, the relationship wouldn't have started in the
yeah,
first
so,
place,
I mean,
which is very important because that is the seminal fact,
I guess. Is what.
It's not the seminal fact, and the reason why it's not is I think the relationship has to be viewed as a whole, and that's my main point. You can't pick the pieces out. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel, and I wish you a safe trip, a quick trip to Sterling and to Delavan. Obviously, won't.